I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on AM 1170, The Answer. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit our show archives at tvtimemachine.com. Today on the TV Time Machine, we welcome Jason Schwartzman, writer and executive producer of Mozart in the Jungle. Mr. Schwartzman is also an accomplished actor who's appeared in such films as Rushmore, The Grand Budapest Hotel, and the HBO TV series Bored to Death. Over the next segment, Jason Schwartzman will talk about his Golden Globe-nominated series, Mozart in the Jungle, available for streaming on Amazon Prime Instant Video. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to compose too many notes, feel free to cry Wolfgang as we write our Requiem for the Past in order to compose a much more classical present. Jason, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Jason, tell us what Mozart in the Jungle is all about.
It's a television show that is about the classical music scene in New York and kind of the high and the low of it and the behind the scenes of it and really what goes into making it all come together. And it's based on a book that I had read called Mozart in the Jungle, Sex, Drugs, and Classical Music, which was the first thing that I had ever read, which really the world of classical music, which I had always kind of perceived to be one of super refinement, rich people in the audience, you know, jewelry, not, you know, cough drops so you don't cough at the wrong time and no one to applaud and, you know, just like very fancy world. And it was the first time that it ever made it more human, I guess. And you read about the orchestra, you know, maybe the audience is rich, but the people in it are not, you know, rich just because they're wearing tuxedos, which if you get close to them maybe are full of holes or, you know, old stinky tuxedos. You know, it's not what it appears to be. It's actually a world of just normal people trying to make ends meet. And also, you know, there is like a lot of drug use and you know, some debauchery sexually and politics and stuff. And it's a world that it just kind of opened my eyes, and I guess it was kind of like shining a light on a subculture, but a subculture that was that's kind of right in front of all of us.
Right, and specifically, you also deal with the politics behind the scenes in Mozart in the Jungle. How cutthroat is it, and is it any more cutthroat than any other artistic endeavor?
Well, I think that it is cutthroat. You know, I'm by no means like a master on every single orchestra. I think that, you know, every orchestra probably is its own universe, but ours is sort of loosely based on one, but it's based on one from, you know, a different era. So ours is kind of a bit updated, and we kind of invented a few things and kind of took elements from different orchestras. But I think that any time you are dealing with a lot of money being spent, you know, it can get cutthroat because no one wants to lose money. And so everyone is sort of vying for the top spot and vying to put themselves in a situation where they can be protected and also be commended for their work. So there's a lot of cutthroat behavior and a lot of, especially too, to be in the orchestra, you know, to be in an orchestra and to, like, you know, get tenured and stuff like that, everyone is sort of like watching their own back. So it's very complicated, and there's all kinds of union rules and things that people are trying to get into the union and to maintain their status there. So it's very complicated, and it keeps growing. You know, it's like a microcosm, like within the orchestra, within just the string section, it's, you know, it's political, and then within the orchestra it's political, and then the orchestra is the subject of politics of the board, and the board answers to someone else too. So it's kind of like always growing.
Now, growing up, did you appreciate classical music?
Well, my mom, her father, my grandfather, was a classical flutist who actually was the first chair flute in the Toscanini's orchestra.
Wow.
And he was a composer, and so it was around my life a little. And my mom's sometimes would take us to see classical music live. And as a kid, I always loved it. When the music began, I was always sort of transported. But I do think, too, as a little kid, like when my mom would say, hey, why don't we go see the orchestra today? You know, we didn't go all the time, so it was very rare. But I was always like, oh, really? Because that meant putting on a jacket, going to this place where all these fancy people, like it had a kind of negative thing to it because it felt exclusive to me. Like the people felt like they were just really fancy. I don't know, I loved the music but didn't like the process of seeing it. And I think now that's all sort of changed because I realize that it's, you know, it's not really fancy.
Well, of course, on the show, you have a great, great cast.
Yeah.
One of your cast members is Malcolm McDowell. Tell us about working with him and his character, Thomas.
Well, he plays the character named Thomas Pembridge, who's the head of the orchestra and the head conductor who's on his way out. In the first episode, it's his final show, and he's going to be relegated to more of a like a figurehead type place, trying to get donors and subscribers to the orchestra. But he's not happy about it. And he's very feisty and a very bright, feisty conductor. And that, you know, he's being pushed out by the board and by a younger conductor, which is Gael Garcia Bernal. And we needed someone that was, you know, right for the job, and right for the job being someone that is beyond charismatic, you know what I mean? Almost like a volcano that you can't stop watching. And that is Malcolm McDowell. The first day we were shooting, he walked out. And, you know, I could see a lot of actors, even though they thought they knew what they were doing, I could see a lot of actors walking out, standing in front of an orchestra and being very intimidated by these real musicians staring at them, waiting to be conducted. And he was not. He loved it. And that's what we needed, was like someone who wanted it. And he's just the coolest. And also, you know, selfishly, myself, I love like the era of England that he comes from,
right,
which is, you know, 60s and 70s. Like, you know, tell me about Peter Sellers. Tell me about the Beatles. You know, he met all these people. And so he's just full of stories about them. And I think that it's just like, when else are you going to get this type of window into the lives of people that you admired? So it's like he was the perfect actor for the job and the coolest guy to hang around.
Well, speaking of conductors, you also have another conductor character on the show, Rodrigo.
Yeah.
Tell us about him and the rivalry that he has with Thomas.
Well, yeah, so he is coming into New York as this new, feisty, powerful, young conductor. And in a lot of ways, he's sort of like Thomas when he was young. So there's a real tension between them because, you know, Thomas doesn't want to go. And Rodrigo comes in, but he's kind of like a new blood. And he's trying to revive classical music in New York, which a lot of people are saying is dead.
Mm-hmm.
So he is trying to do it by any means necessary. And that means sort of shaking it up and getting a lot of these guys who are sort of stuck in their ways, a lot of the people in the orchestra, to be doing things that are unorthodox, like, you know, playing, like he makes them do an exercise so they all put down their instruments and just play invisible instruments.
Right.
And these guys are like, what are we doing? This isn't, what is this? And he makes them all go on a field trip one day and play in an abandoned parking lot. You know, he's trying to spice it up, and, yeah, a lot of people are not happy about it.
So what are the qualities of Mozart and the Jungle that make you the most proud?
I think a few things. One is I'm the most proud when I see it. I feel like hopefully we did a good job of having just enough real stuff and just enough invented stuff. Because if it was all real, my personal opinion is that like orchestra members would be like, if it's, you know, what's the point in watching it? I experience this every day. I don't need to see this. So my hope was that we showed enough real stuff that people who are not musicians would be like, wow, that really happens? But we've also taken some liberty, and we've done it with musicians in mind. So anytime we invented stuff, it was always done for their amusement. So hopefully, like, they'll be like, wow, I wish that could happen.
Right.
So, you know, hopefully that's one thing that I think I'm proud of, is that we went through, you know, a great lengths to sort of, like, invent stuff for them. And also, like, you know, the book is, the book that it's based on is called Mozart in the Jungle, Sex, Drugs, and Classical Music. And the book is way, 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 way more debaucherous, and it's full of way more sex and drugs. But I think, you know, in my opinion, reading Sex and Drugs is a different thing, because you're reading it, you read more slowly just by nature of the you know, of the art form. Your reading is so much slower, so you take it in more slowly. If we were to have as much sex and drugs as the book has, every scene would be just like someone doing a drug and, right, you know, saying something lewd. And I think that it would lose its power, and I think it would be like not showing respect to the music and to the musicians.
Right.
So I think our show, like, we did a good job of stripping back some of that, but still keeping it interesting. So it's a bit more of like a melodrama. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud that when you watch it, it's not just like, oh, look, classical music plus sex plus drugs.
Right, exactly.
Excitement. It's not that. Like, I think we didn't ever want to rest on that.
Jason, it's been a tremendous pleasure having you aboard the TV Time Machine.
Cool, thank you.
Feel free to join us again in the future or in the past.
Please have me. It was really fun.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
Is Jesse Donald Knotts.
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness, psyche.
The Archive of American Television, capturing television history, one voice at a time.